Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Davis Matic, joined today by Matt Harmon from Yahoo Fantasy Football, also a member of the Fantasy Footballers Draft Kit. Every year, pretty much, when the draft kit comes out, Matt, we get on a podcast and we talk about reception, because you're a lot better at watching film than I am, but also I just would really encourage everyone who watches film as like a maybe not, either a primary or a secondary way of evaluating players to do what you do, which is put a framework to how you're evaluating them. Don't be like, this dude has awesome hip swivel. Be like, this guy is successful at this thing this percentage of the time. I really think that is, you know, sort of hashtag the future of the way that we will watch football and evaluate players.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And I don't know that I would, two things. I don't know that I would encourage anybody else to do this because it's a lot of work. And I would encourage everyone else out there to have a normal life. Whereas I have maybe.
Yeah, right. Like make friends and, you know, like all that. Yeah.
When the draft kit came out, you know, my girlfriend and I live together. We've been literally in quarantine together for the past, you know, however many months or whatever. And she's like, I'm so happy I get to have you back. I'm like, no, it's just upstairs. But I mean, it really is a lot of work. So it's one of those things where I wouldn't encourage anyone else to do that. But also it's so much, I do think that having that like system and the rubric to how you're watching film is important because your eyes can deceive you and we're not really good about categorizing things as we see it happen. And I think that being able to, you know, it takes out like whether I'm good at watching receivers or not is kind of irrelevant because after so long of doing it, you just understand that this is what that is and this is how it fits into this category. And you're able to measure players against each other from, you know, I've got like the 2014 class is a great example because reception's been around for 6 years now. I have every season pretty much of the relevant guys or guys who have stayed relevant from that class, every season of their career logged. And you can see where guys have kind of peaked, where they've gone down or up or whatever. And I think that's really fun because then you have something real to compare these players to within their own careers and then within or without the rest of the league.
Yeah, I think that is a very good explanation of why reception perception works and why you are the right man to do it. So this was a hot topic of conversation last offseason. Not now. No one cares about Curtis Samuel now, right?
I know.
All the Curtis Samuel hipsters, they're gone. But last offseason, Curtis Samuel versus DJ Moore was a real thing. DJ Moore ran 900 slant routes all season long, and honestly, he did run routes that were easier for Kyle Allen to throw, and Kyle Allen missed Curtis Samuel on a lot of them. But I just bought into that offense as a whole a ton in Dynasty last offseason because it projected to be so condensed. So I actually need you to sell me on Curtis Samuel outplaying Robbie Anderson or having a larger role in that offense than Robbie Anderson this year.
Oh, don't worry, man. I still got my Curtis Samuel candle lit here somewhere. I do think I thought the framework between, you know, Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore versus DJ Moore last year was a little stupid because I think you can like both players. I think, as you said, like you can invest in them both because I liked that offense a lot last year, but I also liked it within the framework of Cam Newton's going to be the quarterback, you know, not Kyle Allen. And I think the defense of Curtis Samuel last year is pretty easy to make. And you already started to make it, you know, DJ Moore ran just a ton of slant routes, a ton of dig routes. You know, that's the type of receiver a bad quarterback is going to lock into, is going to fall in love with. And I think we saw that over and over again. And, you know, meanwhile, Curtis Samuel is out there running some of the highest percentage of post and nine routes in reception perception this past year. He's actually not in the ultimate draft kit right now, but I'm going to add him here in the next week or so. And he's up there running a ton of those deep routes, and it's just not a good fit with the quarterback that was back there. And I don't know that this was the best offense in Carolina last year in order, like the best coaching staff to adjust on the fly. Right. And I think it was just a bad fit between quarterback and wide receiver. So flash forward to this year, I don't necessarily know that Teddy Bridgewater is going to be the guy that's going to unlock a nine route runner or something like that. But I think that's the beauty of Curtis Samuel is that he's a guy who can run more than just the deep routes. You know, in reception perception last year and in 2018, you saw him as a guy beating man coverage throughout the entire route tree. And one thing I've discovered now, since I've been doing this for the past 6 years, if you're a wide receiver who finishes above that 85th percentile in terms of success rate versus man coverage, I've tweeted this stat out a couple times. I've put it in a few articles. Only three wide receivers right now who have played more than one season in the NFL and have, have played more than one season in the NFL and have finished above the 85th percentile in success rate versus man coverage and reception perception have failed to record a 1,000-yard season at one point in their career. Those three receivers are Calvin Ridley, Curtis Samuel, and Sterling Shepard. And I think you can argue that, like, Ridley probably would have smashed it last year had he not missed a few games. I think he'll definitely smash it this year, so whatever. Shepard, I think, has been a little bit of a victim of circumstance, was definitely not healthy last year, but was getting used plenty when he was. And then Samuel's kind of a victim of quarterback play as well. So I think if he doesn't ever go on to have any career success or doesn't post that 1,000-yard season, then he would be the one or maybe two of a guy, like an outlier in terms of the entire players that I've charted, which is, you know, 250 over 60,000 routes over the last six seasons.
So what an interesting group of guys there. Cause so I've probably done, I mean, I would guess 40 or so best balls so far. And like, I'm crushing all those dudes, Calvin Ridley, Sterling Shepard, Curtis Samuel, like lot of these dudes I am all in on. Anthony Miller has to be like, he's another guy that I know that you like, and also a guy that, that I really like. So part of that is, one, you know, that sick run he went on for the like in the second half of last season. Like, he was like, you know, he was one of the best 15 fantasy wide receivers from weeks 10 to week 17 last year. But also, like, I just really love guys of that profile, can play outside, can play inside. And the team uses Anthony Miller in every NFL offensive system calls that role something different, like the Joker, the move guy. Some of them just call that guy the flanker or whatever. But I think that position inside of the Matt Nagy offense is actually more, like, more valuable and better than the Allen Robinson position. But Robinson's just so good. And, like, he's, like, always open. But Anthony Miller is a dude who, I mean, if he finishes, like, wide receiver 23 this year, I'm not going to be surprised.
I completely agree with you. I think, you know, I'm really hyped on this 2019 wide receiver class, the class before this year's, you know, Marquise Brown, AJ Brown, Deontay Johnson. Deontay Johnson's a player that I'm going to really hype up or whatever coming to this year. But I think Anthony Miller's a guy who might go overlooked, might get not discussed that much, but I like him just as much, if not more, as a breakout option than all of these really popular picks right now. He's, like you said, in such an awesome position in this offense, not to mention, I think the targets could be really concentrated between Robinson and Miller. And Miller's a player that I compared coming out of college to Doug Baldwin, like that inside receiver that, like you said, can beat press coverage outside when he needs to. In reception perception in 2019, he finished at the 91st percentile in success rate versus press coverage, 79% success rate. He was also at the 83rd percentile against man coverage. So he's a player that can win across the route tree. He can win in tight spaces. That's why he was such a big red zone threat in college. I don't, like, unless he can't stay healthy again, I don't have any questions about Anthony Miller relative to where he's going in drafts right now, because obviously you need a bit of improved quarterback play there. And I think Nick Foles can, you know, be a slight enough upgrade over whatever Mitchell Trubisky was going to be. So, yeah, I think Miller is a perfect breakout receiver this year, and he's a guy I'm – reception perception's always been really excited about, but especially coming into this year.
And, oh, well, also, do you think that Foles better, worse, about the same in terms of fantasy value for Allen Robinson, David Montgomery, Anthony Miller, Cole Kmet / Jimmy Graham? Like, do we think, like, what do we think their offense will be? Do we think it'll be different at all, Foles versus Trubisky?
I don't really think I care about it at all in terms of the ancillary players, which I think is, I like the wide receivers beyond Miller and Robinson and the tight ends. I think Montgomery could see a slight bump if the offense is, you know, maybe 20% better under Nick Foles, which I think that might even be a bit generous. I've never been a big fan of Nick Foles, and I think in adverse situations, he's not been good. I mean, you think about St. Louis Rams, Nick Foles, The times in Philadelphia when things weren't great, obviously Jacksonville Jaguars, Nick Foles, those were problematic. But when the ecosystem is good, whether that was Chip Kelly's offense when he first broke out or the latest iteration of the Eagles run that he went on and obviously won them a Super Bowl, those ecosystems were really good in terms of the coaching staff and the talent around them. Now, I think the Bears are probably somewhere in the middle because he has a lot of familiarity with the coaches that he's going to be playing with. But, you know, I think Nagy has been kind of a bit – I think he's been a little hit or miss, but I think he's also been unfairly on tilt because of his quarterback that he plays with and also the kicker situation that he went into last year with. I think, right. I mean, I legit think it just messed with his head, like constantly. He was way up into his own head about that. So I think Nagy's still a pretty good coach, and I think this ecosystem can be good enough for Foles to be passable, and I think that's good enough for Miller and Robinson, and then I don't really care about anything else.
So I actually do want to argue with you about one guy, though. Okay. I want to argue with you about Deontay Johnson. And okay, this is my take. First off, Juju Smith-Schuster, bad results from last year aside, he is a better football player than Deontay Johnson. He is, even if you count his really bad 2019 where he played injured, he was out-targeted and out-produced by Dante Johnson. James Washington was more efficient than him. He still is eighth all-time amongst players 23 or younger in receiving yards. Like, well, first off, let's just start there. Do you agree that Smith-Schuster is, like, the more talented player?
I don't see this. This comes into part of my philosophy with wide receivers where I just don't even know, like, what's the point of comparing a player Deontay Johnson's going to be asking. Yeah. So I would say that I think, like, Juju Smith-Schuster is a very good wide receiver. And I think that the way he plays in terms of being the guy that's inside, and when you look at his success rate versus coverage scores and reception perception, they've never been very good, except against zone coverage, where that's great because when you line up inside, when you're moved around pre-snap, you're going to face a lot more zone coverage than you are press or man. So it really doesn't matter to me that he's not a great separator against press or a great separator against man, because that's just not what he's going to be asked to do. And when you look at his route tree success rate chart, dig, curl, slant, flat, everything else is not good. So I think that I think that you can build a really good offense around that player. I just don't know that you can run a highly successful, healthy offense through that player. I think it's the same. You're probably going to hate when I say this, but that's fine. But I think it's very comparable to a guy like Jarvis Landry, who you can run a lot of targets through that player and they can put up a lot of stats, but is your offense necessarily at its peak efficiency if you're doing that? Are you a very healthy offense? I don't think that Landry has ever been the focal point of
don't hate that comparison. The idea that Smith-Schuster is more of an accumulator than a value creator in and of himself. Also, like, this is classic fantasy football argument, but, like, if you take away in Juju's career, if you just take away two plays, which are the two 99-yard touchdowns that he has in his career, his numbers do actually look a lot different. Yeah. Like, and that is, like, such a, like,
take away
the two best plays he's ever made in his life, and he's a way worse player, but, like, it is just sort of, like, an interesting thing to think about as it pertains to him. And I mean, there is, like, a little bit of, like a skin in the game argument as it pertains to Smith-Schuster, in the sense of, like, the team seems like they are not that interested in him, right? So they keep drafting these young wide receivers, right? And they also are now making it seem like they're not going to re-sign him. Like they drafted Chase Claypool to replace his position, which is weird. So, but anyways, back to Deontay Johnson. I would just say
that, like, maybe the Steelers draft these guys like Deontay Johnson. I mean, Claypool played a ton outside in college too. And, you know, James Washington is an outside field stretcher too. I think the way that you unlock a Jarvis Landry or a Juju type and give them their peak value is by having somebody outside to dictate coverages, to separate at all levels of the route tree. And obviously Juju had a player like that in Antonio Brown earlier in his career. And I think that's when you when you have those two positions firing off at once, I think you can build an ideal passing offense. So that's what the hope, I think the hope for people who are high on Johnson, like I am this year, or even the Steelers are, is that he becomes that player. I don't think he's going to be the next Antonio Brown or any crazy stuff like that. But I think if he becomes that high end separator outside, then both of these guys are firing off at peak efficiency. And that's good for the Steelers offense. And I think it's good for both players.
So, and I think my counter to the Dante Johnson, I can never decide how I want to say his name, by the way. I don't actually know if it's Dante with like a silent, like I sound or whatever, or if it's full on Deontay, but either way, my opinion on the situation is this is actually sort of similar DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel stuff from last year, where you could totally argue Johnson's the better route runner. He's like the more, maybe not more efficient, but like he's the player with more artistry in their performance. Like he's able to do more things. You're able to ask him to do more. And actually this might even be, I've heard this take before. I can't be the first one to have espoused this, but actually the idea that because Johnson is not as naturally physically gifted as Smith-Schuster, who's like huge and fast and agile in ways that human beings like are rarely ever are, he might be a better route runner. He might have like a better sense of the offense, a better sense of timing, because he has to be as good at his size and speed. I think it's sort of very similar to DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel, not likely to matter because at like, you know, at mean outcomes, Smith-Schuster is just going to see more volume, basically. That's my opinion on the situation as it stands now. Like, I think Johnson is overpriced. Smith-Schuster is underpriced relative to their median outcomes. But it wouldn't surprise me if Johnson is actually like the more talented player, quote unquote.
Right. Or you could say the more like tactically valuable player, because I think
that's probably the right way to say it. Yeah.
I think it's the same thing in LA. You could look back on Brandon Cooks and Cooper Kupp. Like, I think Brandon Cooks is clearly the quote better player and the more tactically valuable player, even if Cooper Kupp is going to pile up, you know, a ton of production. Obviously Brandon Cooks is not there anymore, but like, you don't want to run your offense through a Cooper Kupp. You want to have a Brandon Cooks and a Cooper Kupp firing off at the same time. And I do think it is eerily similar to this situation in Carolina last year. And also I think too, because you have to bake in the risk of another quarterback injury. Like if Big Ben comes back and A gets hurt or B is way less than the version.
Yeah, just not effective.
Yeah. Then I think that's going to favor a player like Juju, who I mentioned, curl, slant, dig, flat. Like those are great bad quarterback routes. Deontay Johnson can separate on all those routes too, but he's not going to be fully unlocked by a quarterback who has been compromised, just like Curtis Samuel was not going to be. I mean, one of the first games I went to look at for reception perception with Curtis Samuel, not to bring it back to that, but was that week two game when Cam Newton was just clearly not himself against the Buccaneers on Thursday night. And you've got Curtis Samuel separating at all levels, but even Cam Newton in a compromised self was not going to be able to take advantage of that, much less a quarterback like Kyle Allen. And I don't think Kyle Allen's good. I think Mason Rudolph and, you know, Duck Hodges might even be worse. So, I mean, if we're looking at a situation when Ben comes back.
Duck Hodges is like of the 96 quarterbacks with roster spots in the NFL. I think there's an argument, one, that Duck Hodges is the worst and Mason Rudolph is one of the 10 worst, right? Like these guys were so bad.
Absolutely. So that's why I don't think I'm ever going to go out there and say, like, yeah, there's an outcome within the range of outcomes where Deontay Johnson is the better and more productive player this year. But I think the odds that that happens, just like the odds that it would happen last year in Carolina with Curtis Samuel and DJ Moore, everything favors a player like Moore. Everything favors a player like Juju, especially if chaos happens. And we know that chaos happens within the NFL, especially a quarterback who has already started to show that injury decline, just like Cam Newton did, just like Ben Roethlisberger did. I think the two situations are very comparable. So I think it's actually a good learning experience for someone like me to be able to say, like, yeah, I was really excited about Curtis Samuel last year. I'm very confident that if a healthy Cam Newton was playing, that he would have had a breakout season last year. But let's look at all the reasons that didn't happen and imagine that the exact same thing could happen for Deontay Johnson this year, and no matter what we think of him as a player and as a route runner.
Yeah, which is sort of the whole reason and why evaluating things from like a skill standpoint, whether it be through watching the tape or you know, skill-based metrics like, you know, PFF grades and yards per target and everything, like all of that stuff is still going to end up being secondary to, like, you know, who actually is getting the ball most often, right? Which just ends up being the most important thing at the end of the day. Okay, incoming rookies. Who impressed you the most? And then, maybe even the better question is, who impressed you the most relative to, like, kind of what people had been saying about them on Twitter and stuff? Like, did you find any of the popular conversation about, like, Ruggs or Judy or Lamb or Rager, like, any of them to just be like, oh, well, this actually is not the way things are, or not the way things that I saw when I watched them?
Yeah, the only guy that I think my opinion really was much higher on, I think, than a lot of people on Twitter, or maybe just, I don't know about a lot of people, but the general public, I was really high on Michael Pittman. I thought he was a top three receiver in this class. It looks like the Colts did too, obviously. He's a player I was very excited about. I compared him to Allen Robinson within the draft process and was excited about the landing spot that he went to. You know, I don't know how useful it is. I've seen some people throw around, like, look at all these tall, like, big jump ball receivers that Phillip Rivers made it work with throughout his career, and now you've got Michael Pittman in there playing that role. I just don't even know how much Phillip Rivers has left. I go back and forth so much on that signing and just how much it's going to be worth, which is actually interesting because Mike Williams, the guy who is the latest, you know, big outside jump ball receiver that Rivers worked with, man, there were so many times Rivers just threw a lollipop up to Mike Williams and was just like, go make it work. I've never watched a player or charted him for reception and seen a guy get thrown into more contested situations than Mike Williams does. Like, he's not as bad of a separator, I think, as people might think, but he gets a lot of contested targets because I don't, whatever Rivers is doing at this point with the deep ball is not really working. So Pittman was a guy that I really liked, but honestly, I didn't really feel too out of consensus with anyone in this class. The only one that I thought was a really difficult evaluation, but it might not end up mattering because of where he went, was Brandon Ayuk. I know a lot of people had him. I know Daniel Jeremiah had him as a top five wide receiver in the class. DJ's a friend of mine. I really respect him. But I thought it was like, I wouldn't take that player in the first round, but then the perfect coach for his skill set, I feel like, took him in Kyle Shanahan. So my evaluation of my thoughts might really not matter in this case.
Yeah, Ayuk is a total kind of like a Rorschach player, and then also stuff might just not end up mattering because he just ended up like he's kind of like a Debo Samuel clone in some ways, and he just ended up in an offense that's perfectly set up to use his skill sets. I'm wondering the projected role that you see Henry Ruggs excelling in the NFL. You know, obviously dude's super fast, but he actually was not really like a nine route runner at Alabama, or at least when he was running nine routes, he was not targeted on them, you know, extremely often. He was more of like a slants and, you know, end arounds and stuff style player. So kind of how do you see the Ruggs fit in Oakland?
Yeah, right. Like, he probably won't get targeted on many nine routes in Oakland either because of the quarterback that he's playing with there. I think that he's a player that you could use like early career Mike Wallace when he was with the Steelers, or even Tyrell Williams when he first broke out with the Chargers. Obviously they're teammates now in Oakland, but I would use him less on just straight up vertical plays and more on crossing routes over the middle, which I think is what the Raiders probably have in mind for him. I do think it's a little bit of a strange fit. And I also think they have some overlapping skill set players there, like Williams and Ruggs, I think are actually very similar in terms of how you'd want to use them from a route distribution standpoint. I think that Ruggs can grow into a player beyond just crossing routes and deep routes. I think he shows enough route nuances in his game that he can be more than that. But I definitely think that's how you want to use him early in his career. Less straight up vertical plays and more get him running over the middle, get him into open space. He's not as good as Marquise Brown was last year. I think Brown is the far superior talent and far superior route runner. And I think if one of them's going to become like a Tyreek Hill number one receiver, I definitely think it would be Brown over Ruggs. I think Ruggs' ceiling is more around like those early career Steelers, Mike Wallace days, which I don't know how inspiring that is, but I think you can produce a lot and you can be very tactically valuable to your offense in that role.
Yeah. So, I mean, the meme for Ruggs is, oh, he's going to be a more valuable NFL player than he will be for fantasy football. He'll clear that space out. And like, I mean, I don't know. It seems like a weird fit with Derek Carr, right? Like, I don't know how.
I mean,
how long
are they invested in Derek Carr? I mean, I think that's the question to ask, because we could sit here and do analysis from a dynasty perspective of like, yeah, weird fit between Ruggs and Carr, but how long do they really want Derek Carr to be their quarterback? I think that's a question worth asking, but it feels like we've been asking that question since John Gruden came to Oakland, and there really hasn't been any change there. So maybe Carr just is the guy. And in that case, yeah, he's probably not going to be the best player to take advantage of him from a deep ball standpoint.
Yeah. And CeeDee Lamb, do you have a preferred CeeDee Lamb comp in the NFL?
Yeah, it's not original, but I do think he was so similar to DeAndre Hopkins. And I think he can be that player when fully unlocked, because, I mean, he's actually probably a better after-catch receiver than Hopkins has been to this point in his NFL career. But I think Hopkins is an underrated separator. I think Lamb was an underrated separator in college. Like, I think Jerry Jeudy obviously was the peak of route running in this class, but I think Lamb is actually the better player because he has this same type of way where he sort of marches on his release move, and Hopkins, you'll see, does that a little bit too. And both of them, I think, are so great on high degree of difficulty targets. So, yeah, I mean, Dallas just has an unbelievable receiver core at this point. Their setup is pretty nuts, and I think Lamb was the king of this last draft class for sure.
Yeah, they're gonna score lots of points, and they're gonna gain a lot of yards. Do you think any? I think probably no rookie wide receiver is a good target in best ball or anything right now. I mean, is there? I don't really see a case for drafting any of them with how much they cost now. Now, that doesn't mean that they're all going to be useless. Like, I'm sure that a lot of these guys are going to have some spiked weeks. Are there any in particular that you think will have a first year impact?
I think with the way this offseason is going to go, it just makes it that much more difficult. Like, you know, how much time are these guys going to be able to spend together? So, and I don't think any of them landed in such a great situation that I absolutely have to target them. So yeah, they're guys that I might draft here and there if they get to the right place, but I don't see any as like a priority target.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. How much tight end stuff do you do inside of reception perception? Is there any
0.0 because okay. It's a two-part answer. One, I got enough work. I got enough wide right. receivers to look at to not want to spend time with tight ends. And two, the more technical answer is that, you know, it's taken, I think, 4, 5, 6 years for reception perception to get to a point where I understand where the averages are and like what's good and what's bad and what the data really means. That I think if I started including tight ends, because they're so different than wide receivers, there just wouldn't be anything there worth comparing it to.
So then this question is going to be a non-technical question then.
Shoot from the hip. I can do that.
Who do you like better, Noah Fant, TJ Hockenson?
Oh man. I think Hockenson was, you know, a theoretical better prospect from an all around standpoint, but I think Fant is the guy that I'm more excited about right now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think, Fant actually probably settles into a role where he's just going to have at some point like 5 straight seasons of like 80 catches or more, because he's not a particularly great run blocker or anything like that. Yeah. And they drafted Albert O, who theoretically can play in line and stuff like that. So I like that long-term for him. And Hockenson, because he's so good at it, I think they might just always ask him to be a 6th offensive lineman, right? And he might catch a ton of touchdowns or something. Like one season, if he caught 11 touchdowns or something, that wouldn't be surprising. But his utility as a blocker might limit his ceiling for fantasy long term.
Yeah, I agree. And how do you feel about this Broncos offense, though, going into this year? It's kind of an exciting crew.
it is such an exciting crew. Like you have Sutton to be the big boy on the outside, right? To handle number one corners, to occupy safeties. Then theoretically you have KJ Hamler as the joker, the move guy, the flanker, the slot guy, whatever. You know, he's gonna have all those and the clear out stuff, right? Like he will be able to run nine routes. Then Judy is your technician, right? You can play him inside or outside. You can ask him to do a lot of more complex stuff. Theoretically, that's his role. You can play 12 personnel if you want to. You know, Philip Lindsay is a good pass catching back. I don't know if Melvin Gordon is an efficient pass catching back, but he does catch passes. Yeah. And it all comes down to kind of like, you know, we got the soup, right? We have all of our ingredients. We have the chicken stock and we have the meat and we have the vegetables, but, do we have the salt and the pepper to tie it all together and make the soup taste good? Right. And, you know, I have a feeling that Drew Lock might be like chemically modified, no sodium salt that almost does what you want it to do, but isn't quite there.
Yeah, that's a great, he's clarified butter. It's like, yeah, this is pretty good, but damn, if this isn't real butter. Yeah, I hear you when you say that. That's a really good analogy. And yeah, I think the Broncos are one of many teams right now that I think could have a really good 1A, 1B combination between their top wide receivers. I think that it's just tough. It's tough for me to get too excited about Judy because of the offense. And then also, you know, just the truncated offseason, what we're doing here with rookie wide receivers. I do think they're all avoids, but I think from a long-term perspective, the next couple of years, it's a really exciting group. And I think that's something that the Broncos probably haven't been able to say the last few seasons.
Yeah. Which I mean, yeah, like at least it's exciting, right? At least that they're like, we have some theoretical upside on offense if Drew Lock is good. And I'll give this to Drew Lock. He's going to go down swinging. He's not going to check down his way to the Denver Broncos bench. You know, he would rather throw four interceptions in a game, than go, 30 for 30, you know, the full Philip Nelson, right? Where he goes 30 for 38 for, 192 yards. That's just not going to be his style.
Yeah. I think he has the weapons to do that too, or at least to invite that style into his game. Cause I don't think you saw it as much, that sort of gambling and the risk taking and just, you know, I'm going to write this check and because I believe my arm can cash it sort of style to his play as a rookie, as much as you did in college. And I think you could maybe say that was because of a coaching staff, you know, shout out Vic Fangio. What a gem of a guy. But he clearly didn't want anything to do with Drew Lock to start his rookie season, and maybe that was just he wasn't going to go out there and take as many chances as a rookie, or it was because the weapons that he had just didn't really invite that type of play. You know, when Cortland Sutton's your only guy and Noah Fant sort of starts to figure it out, now he has a collection of a cast of characters where he can really feel, I think, free to be that sort of risk taker.
Yeah, which I want to see it, right? I want to see the AFC West, you know, basically just turn into the Big 12, right? I want all those games every week to just be, you know, total, like, let's throw it up and let's see what happens. Let's have 45 to 42 games every weekend. Like, that's fun, right? Who yeah. doesn't want to see that? So I am all on board for that. I really liked KJ Hamler actually as like a prospect. You know, really good profile, like crazy speed. There was, I believe Ian Horitz posted it. I'm not 100% on this. So if someone else did, I'm sorry, but he returned a kick at Penn State and did the whole 100 yards of the field while avoiding defenders in like 10.2 seconds. Like, that's insane. Obviously that's a very unique skill set for an NFL player to have, but Matt, the guy literally weighs less than me. He weighs like 160 pounds. Like, I am worried for his well-being out on the field.
Yeah, right. It's a little wild. I didn't have a strong take on Hamler either way. I think that he fits in perfectly as probably at best the fourth option in this passing game, where he's not going to have to handle that many touches. Because yeah, I agree. He's a very, very small player. I would love to be able to have the fortitude to have a hot take where I think Deshaun Hamilton figures it out.
But oh, I liked Deshaun Hamilton.
I love Deshaun Hamilton. Also, like a good dude too. He's from Fredericksburg, which is it's about 30 to 40 minutes. It's where my oldest sister still lives in Virginia. So it's about 40 minutes from where I grew up too. So shout out to Deshaun Hamilton. Hope he figures it out.
Shouts to Deshaun Hamilton. All right. I'm going to have a dissenting opinion again.
All right.
Terry McLaurin. The people love him. I think all of the like, wow, it's crazy he was so good in that disgusting offense and all that stuff. Like I'm with all of that, actually. I totally think that it was really impressive what he did as a rookie. These are my concerns. One, Dwayne Haskins might not be that good, right? Haskins might be worse than Case Keenum, right? And you know, that right. That's not ideal. That's not ideal to be worse than Case Keenum. And you know, I don't know if we can just chalk up like 140 targets for him for a couple reasons. One, I think they're going to throw to their running backs. Like all these guys they drafted and they signed McKissick, who's like more of a pass catching running back than, you know, a pure runner. They draft Antonio Gibson, who was literally a wide receiver before converting to running back. Yep. So we kind of think he's going to catch more passes. Antonio Gandy-Golden. I would imagine they have some playing time scheduled out for him. Like, I think my argument boils down to they have a lot of guys, and I'm not sure that Terry McLaurin is the guy, but maybe he is. Maybe he is, in fact, the guy, and I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think he's good enough to be the guy, whether they view him that way or not. He was a player in his rookie season, finished at the 93rd percentile in success rate versus press coverage, 89th percentile against man coverage. So, I mean, that's a star level profile for sure. I don't have any questions about him as a player. I was actually, even as good as he was within the confines of that bad offense and, you know, as exciting as he looks to watch on Sundays, I was even more impressed going back to actually chart him through reception perception because he's so refined but also explosive. Like, he's not just one of these like little crafty route runners out there. I think he makes the spectacular catches too. I don't have any questions with him as a player. I think it's fair to wonder if we can really pencil monster volume in for him, but I think it should be pretty easy for him to clear 120 targets with the pass catching crew that they have there, because at wide receiver they have intriguing guys like to varying degrees. Kelvin Harmon's intriguing. To varying degrees, Steven Sims is intriguing.
I'm actually low-key a Steven Sims truther.
He's a guy I really want to look at, you know, if I have the time and now that the guys that I'm like done, that I'm contracted to chart are over with. I hope I can get to him at some point. You know, it's just about my own level of commitment and all the other players out there that I would like to look at too. But yeah, he's exciting. And I think he's the one guy that I think if you look at him, you can fit a pretty good slot gadget receiver role with. But it could also be a little bit of an overlap with a guy like Gibson that you mentioned too. So I really like Terry McLaurin. I think he's probably the easiest breakout bet to make among these wide receivers. But weighing with him within this his own class, like this 2019 crop, there's just so many good players. But I think he has a chance to potentially be the best one of the group.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely potential for that. He actually feels more appropriately valued in like best ball and redraft thus far, but yeah. I've been in a couple of these, you know, startup dynasty leagues this offseason. I think I did like five of them, and he was going like, he went as early as in the third round in one of them, and I'm just like, he might be a guy that sees like I think like a 1 or 2 year volume spike, but does not to me necessarily seem like a guy who's likely to be a super super long term like 5 years of 130 plus targets guy. But again, you know, maybe that is not as accurate.
How good? Yeah, I agree with you that he's more appropriately priced in redraft this year. Like if he's around 5-6 turn player, I think that's perfect for him. How good does Haskins have to be for?
It's gotta be better than he was last year, right? He's got to be like, he's what actually would be the upside. What you actually want him to do is you want him to be more like Daniel Jones, where he's still all these terrible mistakes, like fumbling the ball and getting intercepted, but like he's taking some chances. But like Haskins was the weird combo of never took any chances, but it seemed like he just was like, even when he wasn't taking chances, he was still making huge mistakes, which is not a great combo.
No, that is not it. That's not what you want. That's not ideal. I think, you want him to be – I sort of think of McLaurin as like an Allen Robinson-type player when he was with the Jacks. Not similar, I think, but just from a pure, on-paper perspective. Like, with Allen Robinson in the Jaguars back in that 2015 season, it was like, this guy's clearly good. Everybody is buying in on the fact that he's going to be a good player. But how good is the quarterback going to be? How good is Blake Bortles going to be? I think if Haskins can be – even Blake Bortles good, I think that's good enough for McLaurin to have that breakout season. So I just don't know how much of a gap is there to Blake Bortles good to what he was last year, because he was pretty awful last year. Like, he was
still a gap. There is a gap for him to get to Bortles.
Right. Like, I think he just needs to be passable, but the fact that we're not even sure if he's passable based on what we saw last year is not encouraging.
Yeah, that's certainly true. Okay, we need to get some DJ Shark candidates, because they're generally speaking, with the way wide receiver play goes now, is we just get so down on rookie wide receivers who don't perform for a variety of reasons, right? We want to see these dudes smash right away, and it's more likely than ever that happens. But of course, there are always going to be guys who are not, immediate successes as rookies who come on in their second year. This is actually kind of the way wide receiver play used to go, where you would really not expect guys to start as rookies at wide receiver, and then you'd start to be worried in their second year if they weren't coming on. Yeah. So, do we think there is a DJ Shark this year? Do we think it could be Arcega Whiteside? Do we think it's N'Keal Harry, Andy Isabella? Like, do you feel good about any of those guys?
So you're thinking a guy that was, that we saw last season and was not good versus a guy that we saw very little of, and there might have been a couple of encouraging signs.
Yeah, like Andy Isabella had an 85-yard touchdown, and N'Keal Harry, whatever, he ran some nice routes. Not much there. Not much there for our boy JJ Arcega-Whiteside. Like, his team desperately needed wide receivers, and they played Richard Rodgers at wide receiver over him in a playoff game. They played Greg Ward, a converted college quarterback. Yeah, Deontay Burnett, who was cut from like two different teams before he went to the Eagles. So tough scenes.
Yeah, anytime I tweet about how much I like this 2019 class, like I post something about DK Metcalf or Terry McLaurin or AJ Brown or, any of these guys, Deontay Johnson even, all the time there's at least a couple of Eagles fans like, JJ Arcega-Whiteside, gross. Because
I loved Arcega-Whiteside too. I thought he was going to be so good. His final year at Stanford, 14% of his total targets resulted in touchdowns. Like, that's wild. Yeah. And he just flat out sucked hard.
So was so bad. Like,
even again, in preseason.
Yeah, had plenty of chances, had the depth chart, had everything that you want, and was just terrible. So I think I'm less interested in players like that. I mean, N'Keal Harry certainly, I think, is going to get the opportunity to be that player that has a big explosive second season after just really kind of flopping as a rookie. I'm more interested in guys, I think, like a Miles Boykin, like a player like that, that I was really high on coming out of college, and then we obviously just didn't see much from him as a rookie. Or even like Mecole Hardman, like he flashed a little bit here and there, but I'm intrigued about his prospects. Even a player like Paris Campbell that I wasn't all that excited about, I think could fit into a decent role with the Colts this coming season as their slot guy between Hilton and Michael Pittman. So those are the guys I'm more interested in probably than, you know, Arcega Whiteside or anything like that. Andy Isabel, I think it's going to be tough. Like for him or, you know, the three Hakeem Butler truthers who are still out there.
Oh man, Hakeem Butler. I even forgot about him.
Yeah. Well, he's easy to forget about. It's going to be tough for those guys just considering what's ahead of them on the depth chart right now.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be hard for Arcega Whiteside, right? Like he's got to compete with, you know, Alshon Jeffrey, who seems like he might not even be, might even not be healthy enough to play. Really, I mean, he's just got to get on the field. He's got to outplay 34-year-old DeSean Jackson. That's it. That's all he's got to do.
Right, and also if you take Alshon out of the equation. He's sort of what Darius Slayton was to the group of Giants receivers last year. He's the one thing that doesn't look like everybody else. You know, like the Giants had all these small ball slot receivers, Sterling Shepard, Golden Tate, Evan Ingram to a degree is that type of player playing tight end. And then Slayton was the only big outside X receiver that could win on vertical routes routinely and in contested situations. And I think Arcega Whiteside could easily be that guy because he looks different than all of the other Eagles receivers. Again, if you remove Jeffrey from the equation, I just don't know how you have any confidence based on what you saw last year. But again, that could be the situation where he just flips it right away.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like we didn't see that much from Shark as a rookie, right? It was just all, you know, size, speed, college production and draft pedigree. That was like interesting about Shark. And you know, we saw that translate last season, and that stuff doesn't always translate, but it can. And it was it was nice to see.
That's why I think of a player like a Miles Boykin, a guy that I really liked as a prospect that we just didn't see very much of. Like, I don't think we didn't see very much of Shark, but we definitely didn't see him out there, you know, pulling a Arcega Whiteside and just completely flopping.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, let's just close it with, Who are your favorite dudes to draft? Your favorite wide receivers to draft this year?
My favorite dude to draft right now is probably Marquise Brown, because again, believe in the ability. He's a player who finished above the 80th percentile in success rate versus man coverage, only fell below the charted NFL average on one single route last year. It was the comeback route, and you know he's doing all this while he's not healthy. I think it's unbelievable that Lamar Jackson had the efficient season that he did as a passer while Hollywood Brown wasn't popping off for 16 games. So I think if Brown is healthy, he can easily be an alpha number one receiver. And I think he can be a great fantasy bet too, because you know, he's going to give you these massive weeks. And again, I think he's attached to one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. I think that's exactly what you want in a breakout receiver for sure. So he's probably one of my favorite guys to draft right now for sure. Beyond, you know, players that we talked about already, like Anthony Miller, Deontay Johnson. I think Miller is a guy that I'm definitely, you know, hammering everywhere. And also DK Metcalf, I mentioned him in passing a couple of times. I definitely love drafting him as well.
Yeah. I really like the Marquise Brown one. Like the idea that he was as good as he was last season while not being healthy, and the fact that Baltimore probably passes more this year with just some like normal regression stuff for their offense, you know, not being as successful on fourth downs. So, you know, they're trailing in games more often. Like, I mean, we could see Marquise Brown see 60 more targets this season than he did last year, which would just be, you know, that would be absolutely massive for him. So everyone follow Matt on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB, which is so funny. Because you've now been around so long that you have followers who just have no idea what that is in reference to. Isn't that funny?
No, I mean, I would say the majority of people who follow me probably don't know what that means. It really is like getting I always compare it to getting an ex's name tattooed on you. It's just like, it's part of your life now. And there's really nothing you could do about it. Because if I change, like @MattHarmon is taken. Can't do that. And I'm not going to be the type of person that petitions Twitter to give me that. And if I take away the BYB, then, you know, at this point it's a loss of the identity. And also I would lose the blue check. And if I lose the blue check, obviously I'm finished.
I mean, dude, come on. I would commit crimes to get the blue check. So definitely don't change it. You got it. You just got to keep it
forever.
But everyone, you can read all of Matt's work over on Yahoo Fantasy. And you can purchase the Fantasy Footballers Draft Kit, which has all of the reception perception data in it.
Yep. The best way to do it is receptionperception.com, or if you want to check it out beforehand, best thing to do is go on Twitter, use the hashtag receptionperception, and you can see all the stuff I'm putting out in advance.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back soon.